Thanks to everyone who read. At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Javon H. from Washington, D.C., with Someone Who Believes in Me.
Hi, I'm Javon, and I'm an addict from D.C. My clean date is April 15th, 2003. I have 8 years and 1 day. And it's been quite a journey for me. I just want to tell you a little bit about how it was before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, because my topic is someone who believes in me. And that's a heavy piece. And I didn't have that when I got here, nor did I believe in myself. And my father died when I was 5. And I was a daddy's girl, and my whole world shut down. And at that time, I started to fantasize. So fantasy was my first lover. And I would create all of these things in my mind long before I picked up narcotics. And I had a lot of behavioral problems because I was acting out, and I'm nervous, right? Because this is my first time sharing at a workshop. But God is moving in me. And so, you know, in elementary, I would act out and all of these things. And by the time I got to junior high school, I was a runaway. My mother really couldn't do anything with me. And I would cuss her out, and I would run away, and all I was searching for was my father. And so what I'm talking about is I'm talking about long before narcotics, I was searching. Not sure of what I was searching for. And along that journey, I started picking up things and members and people along the way. Kind of like Goldilocks, you know. And so I was a young, tender girl. I was naive at that time, and I really wasn't interested in people my age. I always hung with older people. All my men have been in their 50s or older. And those are the kind of men that at 14, I was with 35-year-olds, doing 35-year-old things. Today's Just for the Day talks about acting as if. So I acted like I knew what they were doing. And eventually, I learned the game. You know, and it took me a lot of places I really didn't want to be.
There's Cohen Bikes. I need you to make the announcement.
They're towing bikes. Motorcycles? Please go get your motorcycles. I might want to ride on one after the workshop. Thank you, baby. Oh, this is fun. And thanks for loosening it up. But I started picking up things along the way. And so, you know, I would run away like every week. I really didn't have any interest or concern about what my mother was saying, because at that time I had got that man. And you know, when you get that first thing, I'm talking about before the dope. You know, I didn't want to hear anything else she had to say. He was my sponsor. Because see, my mother was my first one. You know, and then he became my sponsor. And whatever he said do, I did. And like I said, I didn't, a lot of the things I didn't like to do. And so I pretended, you know. And so I'm going to speed it up a little bit. And eventually, I smoked my first joint. Landover, Maryland, Beaver Dam Park. You know, and my cousin passed it to me. It was kind of going in rotation. And it was my turn. And I acted as if. So I took a hit. And that was my first introduction. And I didn't quite know what to feel or anything like that. But every time narcotics came around to me, I took them. And so it went on to that journey. And I got to a place where I wanted to die. And the drugs really took off. And I was one of them addicts who and I'm nervous, so if I seem like I'm jumping all over, you know. I was one of them addicts who just really wanted somebody to love me. I just wanted somebody to rescue me. And my mother had seen, I became angry with her, and I had resentments towards her because she didn't save me, the five-year-old little girl, when my father died. I thought it was her job to protect me. And my mother was only doing the best that she could. She had three children with, you know, and I don't come from the projects. I come from good homes, good eating, good schools. And she never understood why I would always go to the projects. Why was I...
Excuse me, dear. We have a medical emergency. The motorcycles that are parked in the front of the convention center need to be moved immediately. Please, if you have a motorcycle, please come remove your motorcycle. Excuse me.
All right. And, I don't even know where I left off at. But, look, I can't hear none of that, okay? you know, I kept going back to the projects, right? My mother, that's right, baby. It was always that one. Yeah. And my mother never understood that, right? But at that time, and drugs really wasn't that bad then. You know, I was a teenager, but I was all, you know, I started working when I was 14. And so it was real prevalent to me to get I had to get a job. Because see, people that I was using with and hanging with were 35 and stuff. And they had jobs, so I told you I had to act as if. And so my mind is like all over the place. And I remember my mother coming one day, and I must have been about 17, and she said, "You're going to come." She had a moving truck. And she said, "I'm going to move you to North Carolina." And I didn't know about no geographical changes or anything like that. But I told her, "I'm not getting on that truck." And I got on it eventually. And I stayed all of 5 days. I called my boyfriend. And I said, "I need to get home." Not knowing quite sure where I was going, but I did go to my grandmother's. And my grandmother was kind of like an enabler to me. She was real strict, though, you know. And I came to live with her.
And my life just kind of, I partied all the time. I smoked a lot of PCP. And I just did a lot of drugs. Whatever it was, I wanted it. But to speed things up, because that was all the insanity and stuff, right? And I didn't really have anyone that I thought believed in me and things like that. One of the most shattering experiences that I had as a teenager, and I'll share this with you and kind of move on to when I got to recovery. One of the most shattering experiences that I had was, as a young girl, I used to like to sing, and I used to write music, and I used to read music. And so my mother had me in the studios, and I was recording demos, and so Aretha Franklin was going to produce me. I was 14. And by that time, I had started to kind of be a little wild. And my mother said, "No, you ain't going to Hollywood." And I was angry with my mother. And I had no understanding. I was introduced to the program back in 1995. I just came for a visit. I was not an addict that used and kept coming. It was real clear to me, because he always thought that that was just the way my life was supposed to be. That's how it was. That's how I was living. That's what I had been reduced to, and that's what I was used to. And so I got to Narcotics Anonymous. That was in 1995. And I remember in maybe two or three of those days that I had went on a visitation, I had purchased a basic text. Now, the basic text sat in my house for 10 years as a book on this shelf. And every time I would go to clean up, I would dust the book off. And I sometimes attempted to throw it in the trash. And every time I got to the trash can, I could never put it in. I would walk right back to the bookshelf and put it on. So I got to Narcotics Anonymous by way of treatment. April 13th was my actual day of using drugs, that was the last time I used drugs, but I slept for 2 days. And on April 15th, I woke up and I went downstairs to my mother and I said, "I don't want to use it anymore." I knew when I left the crack house I was never going back. There was a spiritual awakening that I couldn't quite understand or describe. I was in the crack house. They said, "You gotta go." And I said, "Take me back where I came from, where you picked me up." And they did that. And I sat on that corner, and the boyfriend at that time come around the corner, maybe about 15, 20 minutes later. I've been ducking him. I got up off the wall and I said, "I'm ready to go home." And I had been up for like 10 days. So I'm delirious. And my mind said, "Go home and get some clothes," because see, I'm a dressed up garbage can when I use. I had plenty of clothes at home, because see, working is a part of my story. But at the end, nothing was everlasting. I couldn't hold on to anything. You know, so they told me this. They said, "Go to a meeting every day." They said, "Get a sponsor." And back then, which wasn't long, 8 years ago, they said, this is your sponsor. Because I was crazy. I was the same one in treatment trying to have sex with the counselor. I'm getting ready to talk about someone who believes in me. Because see, when I got here, I came in here with the same behavior and the same emotions that I had when I was using. All I wanted was to not use drugs. All that stuff y'all were talking about, step work, the recovery process and all of that, that sounded good. So this is what I did. I got me some old-timer men who looked like they were recovering, involved in service. I'm your woman. We together. And I hung with people that had clean time but crazy in their mind. In their mind. And I could relate because I was there. And it worked for a while. And I had one sponsor who told me, I use sex as a weapon in Narcotics Anonymous, okay? So I was a trick out there, and I came in here and posted up on corners in here. Okay? That's my story. And I didn't have a problem telling you. That's my story. And people would always try to step in my process. But see, you got to understand where somebody come from. I was the little girl with the grown man in the street. You got to know where somebody come from. We've got to be careful in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just telling my story. People try to change me and not accept me right where I was at and meet me in the trenches when I got to recovery. And people would tell me stuff like, you don't get it. It's obvious I don't. You know, and I would say things like, oh, they hate me. They jealous. And this is the deal. They may have wanted to really help me and really maybe genuinely tried. But their deliverance to me just wasn't getting me. Because, see, you can't tell me what I can't do. I had one sponsor told me, 5 months clean, I'm in European Convention. Best trick I ever had. What are you talking about? She said, well, I've never been to North Carolina. I said, that's you. She was out of there. 5 months clean. So I had a lot of sponsors. And I'm not going to say that things were wrong with them. There was something wrong with me. I would not allow women to get to me in the inside, right? And I always had to have me a partner, right? And see, I don't do just one man.
Right.
I came in here dishonest. I came in here tricking. And I came in here, because see, at some point before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I learned how to be a predator. But I came in here acting like a victim. I am not a victim. If you catch me on the right day at the right time, watch out. I am so grateful for the recovery process. I am so grateful for step work. And so from 1 year clean to 4 years clean, I practice crazy behavior. Working steps. I was wondering why the sixth step didn't work. How about tomorrow? Go back to two. and believe in something higher than you. Amen. And I could never get that peace right because I had a whole distorted concept of who God was based on where I come from. That's a whole nother topic, though. And so in my fourth year, and this is where it ties into someone who believes in me. Now, this person has been with me since day three. She's my sponsor today. She wasn't my sponsor then. But she was the only one, and it talks about it in Just for the Day, on June 7th, someone who believes in me. And it talks about that one person. You just need that one person to believe in you. And she never tried to fix me, right? And every time I would share something insane with her, she would give me the other piece to it. And she would say, well, let's not look at it this way, let's look at it that way. You know, and as a result of that, I was able to learn things like unconditional love. I started building value. I started learning things like integrity. And what I learned, right, is that when you begin to stand for things in Narcotics Anonymous, right, your world gets small. And I know a lot of people, but I'm not connected to a lot of people. And I'm very careful. There's an internal process going on the inside of me. And I can't have a whole lot of distractions around me, right? Because God can't work with me like that. I get too diverted. And I lose focus, right? And so she took me, but she said, where do you want to go? And I said, I need to go back to the fourth step. I need to address the 5-year-old girl. And I couldn't do it in my first two fourth steps because the pain was too painful. See, I come from a lot of abuse with men. Near death, fatal, things like that. You know, where the doctors say you don't have a 40% chance to live. You know, and a mother telling you you're a whore. And you're a bitch. You ain't shit. You ain't gonna never amount to shit. I come from that. And so my self-worth, because I got a little self-esteem. I can look in the mirror when I, you know, put some clothes on and say, oh, you look good. But I'm talking about my self-worth.
Right.
With none.
Right. Come on.
I couldn't even put one value down on the paper when I did my first four step. Value had none. Wasn't in me. I couldn't dig that deep. It was too painful. And so, you know, I changed a few sponsors, and so in my fourth year, and it talks about it in the third step, it says we either suffer the pains of withdrawal.
Right.
And I'm not talking about narcotics, but dope can be anything that you make it clean. And the man was my dope. And I don't do one at a time, I do two and three at a time, and I travel great lengths to get it. I hit out of town and all of that. Because see, eventually I started, I didn't see any more in D.C. that I wanted, so I started going to New York. And I thought I was doing something. And I remember in my fourth year, I wanted to die clean. I wanted to give up. Life wasn't worth living. Yes, it is, Javon. You need to find a new way to live. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous talks about. You stop using whatever you're using. Lose the desire and find a new way to live. You know, and so I'm in my fourth year, and I've never experienced emotions clean. Everything was good or bad. And now I had to sit with myself. And I started to begin to feel all of the things that I had used for all of those years, all of those men on me that I didn't want on me, all of the places I had been that I didn't want to go. Drugs will make you travel a lot of places, you know, and I became angry, and I wanted to give up, and I called the lady that's my sponsor now, and all she heard was my voice, and she said, "Where are you?" And she met me in the trenches one more time. And she has loved me in spite of who I am. I talk a lot of stuff, but I don't really mean any of that. What I found out is that I'm a beautiful woman on the inside. I don't keep a whole lot of chaos. I don't keep a whole lot of people around me. And I do step work, and I help the newcomer, right? And I'm in service. And I don't do all of that to kind of be behind to not address my disease. I do it because I know there's a sickness on the inside of my gut that needs to be gutted out. It needs to come out, right? But I can't go that far if I don't have somebody that believes in me. I'm talking about somebody who walks with me no matter what. I can call her when I'm having a crazy thought in my mind. You know, where I am now, and I never thought I'd be here, right? Because I don't want a relationship anymore. And that's because I've come in here and I've gotten a relationship with God. See, in year four, he started stripping them out of the way. He started removing them. And I didn't say I stopped having a relationship. I just stopped having two or three at a time. So I got one at a time. And what I learned, I started learning the lessons. I started learning the lessons in relationships or who I was connected to and things. I started paying attention to what was happening around me, what I was doing, right? And I found out that I'm a loyal person. I'm loyal to my friends, deep down to the bone. And I practice principles. And a lot of times people won't like you no more. But I'm all right with that. Somebody told me this when I first got clean, right? I was about 6 months clean. This kind of shared with me. He said, "Make your network small and your God will be big." Kind of flew over my head. Right, and I said, "Wow, what was he talking about?" But see, I didn't have enough know-how to be asking people, "What does that mean?" Right, and eventually the light bulb went on, and all he was simply saying to me is, "Just get you some good people, some good quality people," and I really truly had that. I know I've been kind of like jumping all around. But I come from a place where I was wounded. And I'm not as wounded as I was when I got here. And I'm able to have guys come up to me and say, "You know, you're beautiful," and things like that. Because see, all I ever had to offer was from the waist down. Mm-hmm. Right? That's all I thought, that all I had to offer. And today, I know that that doesn't define me. There's really something beautiful on the inside of my spirit, and I know that, and I believe that, and that only comes from having somebody in your life that kind of keeps sharing with you the beauty, even when you're in the mess, even when you're in the mess, you know, And that's been my process since I've been here. It's just been a beautiful journey. I just really thank Narcotics Anonymous, you know, just for saving my life. The odds were stacked against me when I got here. I didn't see one addict helping another, you know, was without parallel. I didn't see things like that, you know. But I think that's all I have to share. You know, I don't want to start telling no lies in Korea. You know, but thanks for allowing me to share.
Let's thank Javon for sharing again. At this time, I would like to introduce our next speaker, Harold J. from Philadelphia, who will be sharing on the topic, be careful, you might just get what you pray for.
So. I'm an addict and my name is Harold. I'm here to attempt to share my experience, strength, or hope of recovery on you might just get what you pray for. Before I do that, I want to do what I always do, and that's mention the fact that on January the 2nd of 1990, my father died. As a result of him dying, I tend to reflect on different things that he said to me in my lifetime. And one thing he said to me in my early recovery, he said, Harold, you're blessed. If you feel that you've gotten in touch or in tune with something, then your prayer should be to ask God to do for the next person what he's done for you. So before I attempt to share my experience, strength, and hope of recovery on you might just give what you pray for, I'd like to ask that y'all join with me in a moment of solemn prayer to ask God to do for the next addict what he's done for us. Thank you. Now, you know, I want to, first of all, I want to make this announcement that if you came here to see Roger C., Roger C., who, he had a accident last night, and he's home. He had to get rushed to the hospital, but he's home. He's healing. If you got his number, give him a break for a day and give, you know, send him some texts and stuff tomorrow. But if you don't know who I am, I'm Harold J., and I happen to be Roger's best friend. And we were formerly Sponsee brothers when we met, and we've been walking this path for a long time now, 20-some years. So Roger, if you know Roger, right, he remains in control, and Roger said he wanted me to share. So that's why I'm here. You know, so you know, I mean, so that's it, you know. Yeah, I love Roger, so now I'm going to try to do what I can do, right? So it says you might just get what you pray for. And, you know, it's kind of ironic because I woke up this morning, me and Roger were standing in the same house, and I went to sleep last night. And when I went to sleep last night, Roger hadn't came in. Nobody was there. But when I woke up this morning, Roger wasn't there. And then there was someone in the house that said that Roger had been rushed to the hospital. And you know, then they said blood. You know, they said something about blood. And I'm saying Roger was rushed to the hospital, blood. And I'm like, a part of me, you know, I want to kind of like be upset because I am upset. So, I immediately, you know, I sent out, you know, a request on one of them social networks to pray for Roger. And before, long, they came back that, you know, they called and, or I called somebody and found out that he was on the way home. And, you know, the thing is that it just happened that somebody, I sleep personally, you know, I sleep through earthquakes, storms, everything, right? I didn't hear him fall. But it just happened. Somebody was there with some other people in the house, and the other people in the house heard him fall too, but they didn't respond. They figured something's going on, but they didn't know. So one person was there, responded, and then the rest of the house responded, and they, you know, basically took him to the hospital. But I'm saying, what's the topic? Right, right. Thank you. You might just get what you pay for. You see what I because she thought I forgot the topic. Well, listen, I'm trying to say I prayed and I asked people to help me pray, and you know what I was praying for. See, you understand. Let me try to explain something. In the last few years, I have lost like 3 ex-sponsors. I have lost one of my, God, it was one of my best friends. So my whole heart and soul wanted to know that Roger was alive and well. You understand what I'm saying? So I did get what I prayed for. So there's a thing that because I'm saying, well, this is like 11 step stuff. I bought my book, right? You know, so it's 11 step stuff. But you know, would y'all just let me try to like flow with this? You know, I'm not going. I'm not going to quote the literature, but trust me, if you look, you might find what I'm about to say in there. What happened is that this fellowship, it gives us a 12-step process that takes us from self-centeredness to God-centeredness, and there's a place in it where we get to a place where we try to gain this relationship with God. This relationship with God is kind of like a stroll. Like, you know, if you take a stroll with somebody, if you take somebody and you walk together, then what happens is there's a certain amount of entombment that takes place. And what happens is that y'all acquire the same pace as y'all walk together. And the pace that we seek to acquire in the 11th step through prayer and meditation is the pace that's with God. It's not our pace. It's not a erratic pace. It's not a pace that just goes off and starts like doing things. You know, because I could have went off. I said, how did y'all take Roger to the hospital and not wake me up? You know, no, I'm saying I could have went off, right? I could have even went off and said, you know, you gonna tell me to share something, you know? But you know, I do basically what Roger tells me, you know. But you know, the thing, when I first got clean, I came around this fellowship, and you know, I had to say that I kind of felt disconnected spiritually. When they talk about this as a spiritual program, and then I said, but I felt some disconnection. And what happened, I was making meetings, and in the meetings, we used to open with prayer. And when we opened with prayer, what happened is I started seeing the results of the prayer. Let me give you, you know, one of the prayers that you still might hear around. It's because they used to pray different 20-something years ago, right? But it said, God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And as a result of that, what happened is that I started, like, being places and experiencing some things and not doing what I used to do. Like, I started not, you know, because, you know, in some places they talk about, well, you got triggers, you got this, you got that. But here, I'm practicing, God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And through that relationship, I started finding myself in places around people and things that, and not doing what I used to do. You know, I say you got to change your people, place, and things, but recovery is an active change of ideas and attitudes. And when you change your idea and your attitude, then your behavior changes. And so what I found, I was telling somebody about this the other day. I don't like to do a whole lot of talk about, you know, me using, because we all use, or somebody says, you got a problem, you showing up in here every day and you didn't use. I mean, you got more of a problem. You need to make a double, triple trouble meeting or something. Right? No, because I say, you know, people say, qualify. I said, I'm an addict. Right? I qualify. You know, I used to think, well, you need to see all the tracks on my arm. Let me tell you about all the drugs I took. But the bottom line is that I qualify. Right? But what I need people to understand is how I change and how I transform. As a result of recognizing the fact, listen, because you might just get what you pray for. Okay, I'm going to give you some negative stuff, right? A couple of negative things, maybe, you know. You see different women and you want them, right? And you mess around, give them. I had one, oh, God. Matter of fact, I had this one, I didn't even want her, really. But no, listen, serious. It wasn't not so much, but she said something to me, right? She said something to me, and it upset me to a place where I kind of wanted her. Let me tell you what she said, right? I ain't got a couple minutes. No, this is what she said. I don't usually dress up around NA meeting necessarily. And I was at a party. It wasn't an NA meeting. I was at a party, and she said something to me like along the line of, you look good enough to eat. Oh, that's what I said. Right? And, you know, from time to time I feel edible. You know? So what happened was that basically, you know, I got my prayer, I got my wish, and oh my God, you talking about transforming. I don't know if this ever happened to you. Right? But she was like perfect, seemed like to me. She was just so, you know, she liked the things I liked to, you know, and then it was like all of a sudden she just transformed into something else. She went from a joint that didn't curse and went to church to curse like a sailor, right? No, I'm trying to say, you know, it's time for the erase prayer, you know, the delete prayer. Y'all understand what I'm saying? Right. And you know, and then what you find out is that you be praying for things and you be trying to satisfy yourself, right? And you're somebody, I think Brian, he said something, your picker is broke. You understand? It's, you know, I'm just not just talking about even with like relationships. I'm just talking about your picker's broke because you're trying to pick something that's trying to fix a problem, and it's really a spiritual problem, and you're trying to fix it with material things, or, you know, people, places, things, jobs, clothes, the cars, clothes, diamond rings. You're trying to fix it. You see what I'm saying? Instead of, like, being still and getting in touch with some type of prayer that's going to cause you to, like, transform. You know where it talks about changing in an intuitive manner. We begin to change. You know, on the third step, it talks about we giving ability to help people as a part of this prayer. Like, look, you might just get the misery that you pray for when you pray for something that the miserable person that you are. The person, no, I'm trying to get you to understand, you know, like the step process. You know, when I go on the H&I, when I go on the detox, I say things like, I'm here to talk to you because you have been poisoned. That's why they're in the detox. You're in the detox because you have been poisoned. And we have found out who the culprit is. Right? No, seriously. And I'm here to inform you that we have captured him and you are the one that have been poisoning you. And, you know, people say, that's what, you understand? So now, here I am. Now, do you want someone who has been poisoning you, trying to kill you, running your life? No, you need to fire him. Like, no, you need to get anybody. You know, like I say, no. Like I say, you know, Stevie Wonder always say, if I'm driving, I'm not riding in there. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? So you got the wrong person. So this is what, you know, because I, you know, sometimes, you know, I talk to newcomers or people that I sponsor, and I say stuff, and they say, you know, no, I can't run my life. And they think, well, yeah, well, you know, I'm a man, I run my life. No, I can't run my life. It's an illusion. No, try to understand what I'm saying. Look, my life is an illusion. Somebody sent me some information, and it was talking about dancing. And in dancing, you two people are dancing, and someone is leaving. And it appears that they're dancing, but you don't really know who's leading. The man is leading, probably. But it ain't about whether the man is leading. It's in life, we learn to dance like with God. And it appears when we're dancing with God, or your higher power, if you choose to say that, right? When in that dancing, person look at you and they see you dancing. They think that you dancing like you see me right now. And I'm dancing. Look like I'm dancing by myself. But no, I'm being led by God in the dance. See? So when you get into this step, the 11th step, right? It's a part of you forgetting about you. Now see, you get to a place where you get tired because you're gonna try to get naturally. You're gonna try to treat God like a genie in a bottle. Well, that's your habit. You be making your three wishes and all that stuff, right? And you know, you wish for a car, you wish for a new woman, you wish for blonde hair. I don't know. Listen to what I'm saying. But you wish for all these things, and you may, like it's the word is might, you might get that. But the thing is, it was a movie called the Boy Scout or something. One of the Wayans brothers, right? Yeah, and he had like leather pants on, and the guy said to him, he said, "Leather pants, how much you pay for them?" He said something like $300. He said, $300? Do they have a television? You know what I mean? And see what happened is that he was talking about overinvesting. You might have overinvested in your foolishness. No, try to hear what I'm saying. I'm not trying to offend you, right? I ain't trying to stand here and judge you. Can I talk about me? Okay, here I am. The key to my recovery was me recognizing the fact that I was a fool. Yeah, it's a fool that pays like money for things back. I used to buy bags of stuff, right? They had stamped on them like death. No, y'all New Yorkers, y'all know death, pure hell, suicide. You understand? Cut, you know, they should, if they came out with cut your life off, you would pay extra. No, I'm just trying to get you to say, understand where I'm coming from. Right? Now, as long as I leave that person, everybody got better information than him. So I come to believe that if somebody needed to run my life, it ain't me. So now, as a result of that, it's just like, y'all know about a vacuum? You say, a vacuum, it draws stuff into it. It's a vacuum. So once I vacate, then the vacuum there, and that vacuum draws in what belongs in, like, say this is a throne. What belongs in that throne is drawn there. The rightful owner of the seat can sit there once I get out the way. Look. So look, I got to a place, and you'll get to a place. Now, because it's saying, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready. Well, I don't know if you're ready today, but you'll get to a place where you'll get ready. You'll get sick and tired of running your life, right? Or maybe you got sick and tired and you got into some steps and then you got away from it, right? But then you get to a place where you know that prayer works. No, you don't wonder that it works. It's no might no more. It's you know. It talks about in the 11th step becoming skillful. right? Working with a tool. You run up to any carpenter, right? And you say something to him about, do that hammer work. He know that hammer work. You understand? Because he's a carpenter. He know that the tools he working with work. And after a while, as you work on this 11th step, you know that it works. You know that, like, you know when you go to a restaurant. I was in a restaurant yesterday. I like restaurants, too. You know, you order something on the menu, right? You know that if you ask for, like, a steak, medium well, right, then you expecting a medium well steak. That's a certain knowledge. You understand what I'm saying? And as you pray, you start realizing things as a certain knowledge. But then after a while, what happened, remember I was talking about using God like a genie in a bottle? It comes to a place where, you know, you got to recognize, you get to a place, it kind of goes like this. God, I know, I always asking you for what I want. But I just figured just today I would think do something different. What would you like, God? Oh, no. Oh, things start happening now. Now you cooking with gas. No. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. It's just like God was like sitting back just waiting to hear this. And now all of a sudden things start happening. Things start coming together. Obstacles start moving out of it because now God guiding you on the path and making you look. He taking you into the instrument spot. I got a couple more minutes. All right, look. Let me tell you about this because I didn't know. I was clean for a long time. I've been sponsoring more than 20 people for 20 years, right? But a couple of years ago, this guy that I didn't like was in a meeting. He was sharing. He said, I'm an instrument of God. I said, who gave him permission? Right? But guess what? The literature, it is a witness to you becoming an instrument of God. He said, first of all, it said that we ask God, right, to use us. It's his instrument. You asked this one of them days. The days I changed my mind and said, instead of what I want to do what God wants. God, would you use me as an instrument? So God used you as an instrument, and you touched some lives, and some lives touched your life, right? And then what happened? You do it the same thing the next day. Just like when the first day you got clean, you said you do the same thing the next day. And now you started off like at the piano, right? Just playing one key. And now all of a sudden, you playing with 10 fingers. Now you done became a pianist. You understand what I'm saying? So now, because you practicing this principle of prayer and asking, praying only for knowledge of God's will for you and the power to carry it out, right? And guess what? You know what I like about that? As a result of a spiritual awakening, right, when you forget to call God, then God shows up. Because you done built relationship with him. He come looking for you. I don't think you understand what I'm talking about. Right? No. But when you decide to fall back into the nonsense, you understand nonsense, it makes no sense. Right? When you decide to fall back into nonsense, then God notices that you miss it. And say, let me turn this boy right side up. Let me get him back on track. And back on track is you getting back in the pray, meditate, do the work. Pray, meditate, do the work. You know, I was thinking that Roger, who is not here, right, he's a flame fanner. Y'all understand what I'm saying? He's the kind of guy that if he was here, I don't care what he's saying. His whole heart is about fanning the flame of your desire to have the realization of the freedom that the program of Narcotics Anonymous has to offer. So I'm standing in for my friend, the fan flamer. I'm standing in, and all I just want you to get in touch with, not Harold, but in touch with the one that holds the instrument in his hand. The one that causes me to be the person that I am today. No, I'm a kind of guy, listen, I gotta, look, you know what they say about, tell your, uh, uh, never mind how I share in the meeting, what I do in the meeting, how you living at home, come to my house and see how, right? Listen, I think I'm gonna share this and shut up. I don't say that much, right? I got a couple more minutes. I do. How many? Six. Six before my, so that make 11. Oh my goodness. I need to find something to talk about. No, y'all ready? Y'all ready? All right, good, good. Because look, I'm gonna tell you, I believe in the simplicity of this program. They gave me 35 minutes, and when they said 30, I said, well, that's cool. That's cool because I had a sponsor. One of my sponsors has died. He said, well, have your point before you start. So when they give you a 2-minute warning, then you can just finish up. And I got a point. So I got 11 minutes. That's my friend Jerry right there. So look, this is what happened. I'm gonna talk about this. That I was a single father. My son is like grown now. I love my son. He helped me to believe more in God. Right? Let me give y'all some examples about my prayer life. Right? This ain't about me. I'm just trying to tell you some stuff happened because I prayed. And I didn't pray till I came right here. You know, I used to pray like, God, don't let these drugs run out. God, don't let my heart bust. You ever had no prayer? And God, if my heart don't bust, let it be some more drugs. You understand what I'm saying? Little stuff like that, practical prayers. Right? So since I've been clean, I started praying stuff like accidentally. Accidentally I started praying stuff like this because this is what happened. I'm kind of lazy, right? So I didn't want an alarm clock or nothing. So I just started praying like, God, get me up at 7 o'clock in the morning. No, I'm just, that's what I said. So like, you know, I'm, you know, fooling around. Don't nobody know what I'm praying but me and God. So I said, God, get me up at 7 o'clock in the morning. So like, you know, I get up in the morning, it's 7 o'clock. I said, man, that's something, right? No alarm clock. So I say, well, okay, yeah, that's good. All right, well, God, give me up 7:30, right? So God, give me up 7:30. I said, oh, wait a minute. Let me see something. See, I'm going to tell you what, just to make sure that this is really happening, I'm not going to get up. I'm not going to ask God to give me up at a certain time. I got to be somewhere at a certain time, right? So never mind getting me up a certain time. God get me where I gotta be on time. So now I just get up. I don't check the clock. I go in the bathroom, wash up, get dressed, leave out, and I get where I'm going on time. But I'm saying, hold, I like this. This interesting stuff here. You understand? So I get to the point where, like I say, I got, you know, kind of the stuff, enough of the problems out of that, you know what I mean? Because I got away from just being good, you know. So I got to a point where I just started, like, asking God. And when I started asking God, it was a whole lot easier doing what God wanted. And I found out that I wanted what God wanted. So that's that, you know, that's how that progressed. So, you know, recently I'm pretty good. You know, I pray. I still pray. I stay in touch with God like that. I pray. Things happen. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to really talk about, I'm just trying to talk about God and prayer, right? I guarantee you everybody got a story like this. You know, everybody got a story like this. But let me tell you, this is the part that I wanted to get to. Because I'm talking about praying and God, like, hearing your prayer. And I'm talking about without you even articulating it, right? Just because in your heart you feel a certain way. I got this grandson. My grandson is not really able to talk yet, and he can't say much more than daddy, and I ain't his daddy, right? But when my grandson sees me, then he lights up. His face lights up. And I'm telling you that in my heart and soul, I can feel him saying, Grandpa! Grandpa! I love you, Grandpa! And he come running to me, and his mother be saying, you leaving me like that? And it just be this like rapport between me and him. And I know that it's just God rewarding me for doing just what I'm supposed to do. I just try to do what God want me to do. I don't really do what I want to do like all the time. This is my 5 minute joint. Right? But it's okay, look. But I don't. Now listen, there's people because, let me try to tell you something. I don't care what you heard, right? I'm not trying to preach to anybody and I'm not trying to promote any particular type religion, right? I'm only trying to talk about this relationship that's free for you to have with the God of your understanding. And as you grow, because I say, God as you understand is God as you experiencing. And like I say, we all got a story. We all got an incident, right, from probably every day where we just think about something and it happened. Because that's the presence. That's what's happening from this connection. From going from self-centeredness to God-centeredness. I love the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous because I feel like, the guy that won the lottery, the person that got all their dreams comes true. That's what happened for me in Narcotics Anonymous. I feel like it's nothing that I can't have, nothing that I can accomplish. And what's more is all I really want is just another day to try to be an instrument of God's grace, His love, and His mercy. So that's it. I stood in for Roger. Roger's going to be here again, hopefully next year or something, right? And maybe, what is the name of this convention? No, maybe the convention will ask me back. But I thank the convention committee, which I forgot to do. And I thank you all for being so patient, tolerant, and understanding. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Can we please lock up and close the meeting with the gratitude prayer.